requirement for a proposed structure. Section 115-25D and 115-210 of the Sussex County Zoning Code. The property is located on the northwest side of Hastings Farm Road. The 911 address is not available. A zoning district is AR1, tax parcel is District 231, MAP 9, Parcel 5. We have zero letters of support, zero letters of opposition, and zero mail return. And the applicant is, like I said, requesting a special use for the telecommunications tower and a 4-foot variance from the maximum allowable height requirement for a tower.
Flip it one more time.
Good evening, members of the board.
Got it.
You'd think after 5 years of doing technology, we'd figure it out, but I keep proving to myself I am my mother's child. My name is John Tracy. I'm an attorney with Young Conaway, Stargett and Taylor here on behalf of the applicant, Network Towers. I have with me Brian Grebus, who is working on behalf of our RF engineer, Luke Camp, who is our civil engineer, and then Sam Averna and Becky Homan on behalf of Network Towers. I'm just going to run through and do a presentation. All of them are available to answer any questions if you have any specific questions. I know, Mr. Williamson, you've heard me do this before, but all the others are new faces since the last time I was down here. This is an application for a new telecommunications monopole and associated equipment shelter. As you heard, the tower is 154 feet tall, which includes the 4-foot lightning rod. It's located on a property north of Hastings Farm Road, east of Seaford. It's a roughly 19-acre parcel that's currently zoned AR1. As you can see from the aerial photograph, the site itself is largely cleared. It is the site of the Middleford Speedway, which has been there for a number of years and is currently actively utilized in the racing operation. The proposed location in this property will allow the site and the tower to maintain its appropriate and required setbacks. We'll be meeting all of the fencing and lighting requirements in the code. As you heard, we are seeking one variance, as the tower itself is 154 feet tall as opposed to 150 feet tall. That variance is entirely subsumed by the 4-foot lightning rod on the top of the tower. So the tower itself is compliant with the code, but because we have to add the lightning rod on top, that's what makes it violate the height requirements. Folks, I'm sure, are aware of the importance, the need, and the demand for cellular service. This is something that's exploded in the last 10 years, as the phones not only provide the primary means of telephone communication, but also now are used for texting, streaming, watching videos, work, all those types of things, all of which impacts the existing coverage that is available for cellular systems. As noted in the design report that was submitted to you all, per the CDC, roughly 78% of all adults are now in wireless-only homes, while nearly 87% of children are in the same circumstance. As the demographic of the folks living in the homes are younger, or their folks are renting their homes, you roughly find approximately 88% of those folks per the CDC living in wireless-only homes. So the ability to provide seamless coverage is paramount. In addition, as I mentioned, with all of the additional capabilities of these devices, you end up, as they provide more services, you end up actually shrinking the coverage footprint that the cell towers provide. The example I give everybody is if you're at a sporting event or a concert or something like that where you know there's really good service in there, you can't get on your phone to take a video or stream something because there's 1,000 other people trying to do the same thing at the same time, and all of that shrinks the coverage footprint great more and increases the demand for these facilities. In addition, lastly, the RF report notes that roughly 80% of phone calls to 911 are estimated to be coming through cellular communication devices, which of course increases the needs for these to function. So we submitted several reports to you all with regard to radio frequency. The first is the design report, which demonstrates the existing gap in coverage that we're trying to fill and the positive impacts that this would serve on both Coverdale Road and Hastings Farm Road in the area of the Speedway and beyond. As part of this process, though, before we even got to this point, we had to conduct a survey to see if there were any other tall structures within 2 miles that we could utilize. Now, in reality, if you move about a quarter mile off of the location point, that starts to drastically decrease the effectiveness of the particular facilities. But again, the code requirement is 2 miles. And as you saw in the RF design report, there are two facilities at the very outer edge of that 2 mile ring, one of which we are already on, so we wouldn't be going on that one. The second is FM radio tower, which is not structurally compatible. It also would cause interference with the FM signal from our equipment on the same tower. And then again, it's too far away to cover the gap in coverage. In addition, the report, as I mentioned, shows the before and after effect of this tower, and you can see that it provides both better in-vehicle as well as on the street coverage and in-building coverage for folks that are trying to get onto the wireless network. In addition, we're required to demonstrate compliance with the FCC's requirements on emissions. The FCC sets those numbers and required to demonstrate that we are at or below that number, as you saw in the design report and the emissions report that was submitted as part of the application. We are actually 5.3%, less than 5.3% of that permitted number, so we're well within the limits established by the FCC. And as the report noted, that is a worst case assumption, fully loaded tower, all the antennas downlit towards the ground, multiple users on the tower, and even then, we are still only 5.3% of the permitted numbers. We also submitted a rather lengthy data that shows that we are compliant with the FAA for purposes of requirements. Again, we're at 154 feet, including the lightning rod, which is well below what the FAA would trigger here. We do not need to light the tower per the FAA, but as you all know, the Sussex County Code requires us to have lighting every 50 feet, and we will have that lighting every 50 feet. We will also be fencing and screening the site within the requirements of the code. And also, it is designed structurally to have at least two other carriers as required by the code that could co-locate on this facility. The tower is kind of going to be located in the lower left-hand corner where you see the cleared dirt there. We'll be constructing a new 30-foot wide gravel access drive to take you right to the tower. It meets all setbacks. It doesn't interfere with the ongoing racing operations that are occurring at the property. As I mentioned, there's a 4-foot variance that's required. And actually, if I could borrow the tower itself is compliant, as I mentioned, with the code. If you look at the plan, you see this little point at the very top. That's the 4-foot variance that we're seeking, which is for the lightning rod. Candidly, 10, 15 years ago, that wasn't pointed out as something that needed, that counted towards the height. And about that time, it changed. And so we are seeking the 4-foot variance for purposes of that. I'll come back to the standards in a second, but as the board is well aware, the standard to be applied to these types of facilities is would the construction of the tower substantially adversely impact neighboring property owners. The word substantial is actually included intentionally. In fact, it was interpreted by our Supreme Court that it has to be not just adverse, but substantially adverse to not meet the standards. And in this instance, as I've said before numerous times, although new to you, these towers really don't create any adverse impact. There's been no studies demonstrating any impacts on property values, although you can see most of what is around us is a cleared property, and to the lower left-hand corner, there's a cheer academy on that particular property. They don't make any noise, they don't emit any smells. The only lighting is the lighting required by the code. They don't tax county or state resources. From a traffic standpoint, these towers usually have one visit in and out about every 4 to 6 weeks for maintenance purposes. basically a diagnostic van that comes in and runs some computer tests to make sure everything's still functioning correctly. So I would say there is certainly no adverse impact, much less a substantially adverse impact from this facility. With regard to the standards for the variance, I can go through each of these because that was actually something that was flagged by the department when my client submitted the original application. But the uniqueness of the property, the variance isn't really tied to the property itself. Cell tower applications, like the board and the department are aware, are somewhat unique in the context of land use approvals, as they almost always are located on a property that already has an existing use, and they're basically an ancillary use. And they generally occupy only a very small amount of property, in this instance roughly 3,000 square feet for the disturbance in the compound, so they don't interfere with everything. But also, because of the nature of telecommunications services, these facilities don't have the luxury to be located anywhere within a particular area where service is lacking. They obviously need to find a suitable property, and they need to find a willing landlord in order to locate these facilities on this property. So we don't have to move it, we don't have the ability to move it around. And again, it works, if you've heard before, it works like a puzzle. You know, you don't put a tower in and just build it to 300 feet because you think it covers more. When you put these towers in, you're actually filling in like a puzzle piece where the gap in coverage is, so you don't want to make it too tall, and conversely, you don't want to make it too short. And as you note on page one of the design report, any reduction in the height of this facility would negatively impact the coverage that's being designed here. Again, I'd recognize that it's only 5 feet, 4 feet for the height of the lightning rod, but it does have a negative impact on the coverage ability that would be provided by this facility. It's not created by the applicant. This is really something created by the demand for service in this area and the necessary height that this tower must be. Again, the only thing that's triggering the need for the variance is the lightning rod, which is a safety feature, candidly, as opposed to something else. This is the minimum variance that we would need to make it work. Again, it's extremely minor. It certainly won't alter the essential character, as you can see from the plan that I showed you. That lightning rod is likely not even visible on the top of this tower, but it's necessary to provide the safety for the facilities there. And it can't otherwise be developed is interesting because, again, this really isn't as much a land use issue as it is a telecommunications issue. Again, these types of facilities require height to be effective. The towers have to communicate with each other to pass the signal from tower to vehicle or tower to home to new tower. And so the height that's been established here is to appropriately and accurately fill this gap in coverage. And again, I think given that this variance is solely limited to the lightning rod, I don't think it will have any negative impact on surrounding properties. So with that, I'll pause, take a drink, and we are all happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the board?
One question, the backup generator, I'm assuming that the unit will have a backup generator.
Yes.
The decibel levels, it'll be inside so that there's...
It'll be inside of an equipment cabinet, so it's not something that's outside and just on the property. It would have to comply with the county noise ordinance and anything of that nature.
One trip in, maybe a month by somebody with maintenance?
Every 4 to 6 weeks. It's typically a minivan or a pickup truck, and they run diagnostics from there and to make sure there's nothing funky going on. And otherwise, it's entirely fenced enclosure, so you can't just walk and go into the facility.
One other question. Length of time to build one of these that the neighbors will be experiencing the traffic?
It's a matter, and I'm not on the construction side of this, but I'm going to say it's a matter of weeks once they start construction. It's not a... I've seen them go up when I drive north-south on 95 every now and then, and once they get in to actually build it up, it's a fairly quick process.
Thank you.
Mr. Tracy, do you have anybody to affirm your statements?
I do. I can bring up Mr. Grebis for purposes of RF, and I can bring up Luke for purposes of civil.
We'll get them sworn in.
Okay. Why don't you come up? Brian, why don't you come up? Can you just approach Jamie over there?
You can stay at the podium, it's fine. Can you state your name and address for the record, please?
Luke Camp, 769 State Street, Hamburg, PA.
Brian Grievous, Box 176, Fairview Village, Pennsylvania.
And you both swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
I do.
Thank you.
And Mr. Grievous, you first. To the extent that I offered testimony regarding the RF requirements associated with this facility, was everything I said true and correct to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
Same question, except different discipline. To the extent that I offered any testimony or opinions regarding the civil engineering aspects of this project, was everything I said true and correct to the best of your knowledge?
Yes, it was.
I have no further questions.
Further questions from the board?
Thank you.
Is there anyone present who is in favor of case number 13141? Is there anyone present who is in opposition of case number 13141? There are no further questions from the board. I will close the public hearing and entertain a motion.
I guess a couple things for the board. We have three different things we're looking at here. One is the applicant has to demonstrate that they've met the standards for granting a special use exception. They have to demonstrate they've met the standards for granting a variance. And they also have to demonstrate that they've met the standards for a telecommunications tower under 115-194.2, which deals with lighting, fencing, those things that Mr. Tracy was discussing in his presentation. In your motion, if you could address each of those three, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case number 13141 for MATR LLC for the requested special use exception pending a final written decision based upon the record made during the public hearing because the proposed use will not substantially affect adversely the uses of neighboring and adjacent properties. As far as the variance is concerned for the lightning rod, I move that we approve case number 13141 for MATR LLC for the requested variance pending a final written decision based upon the record made during the public hearing and for the following reasons. The property has unique physical conditions. We're not really talking about the property, but the lightning rod really only needs the 4 extra feet for safety. And the exceptional practical difficulty is due to such conditions. Due to such physical circumstances or conditions, there's no possibility that the property can be developed in strict conformity with the Sussex County Zoning Code, and the variance is therefore necessary to enable the reasonable use of the property. The exceptional practical difficulty has not been created by the applicant. The variance will not alter the essential character of the neighborhood or substantially or permanently impair the appropriate use or development of adjacent property, nor be detrimental to the public welfare. The variance represents the minimum variance necessary to afford relief and represents the least modification of the regulation at issue. Also,
You make part of your motion that the proposed tower meets the standards in 115-194.2?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Do you wish to adopt that as your motion?
Yes, I do. Thank you. It's locked.
I'll second the motion.
I have a motion and a second. Mr. Levenger?
Aye.
Mr. Kingery?
Aye.
Dr. Hitchens?
Aye.
And I too, so will they vote. A 4-0 case number 13141 has been approved for the special use exception, the variance, and
Once it's approved.
In all three matters, it's been approved.
That's right.
Have a good evening.